Hi, everybody. This is Anthony, and I am speaking to Locke Kelly, all the way over there at the other side of the Atlantic in New York. Good afternoon, Locke.
Hi, Anthony. Good morning to you.
Thank you. Locke, here is why I'm speaking to you. I'm speaking to you because you're planning to come to Dublin in September, and you're giving a weekend, a 2-day event. And this is primarily directed towards people who are interested in knowing more about you and what might happen on that weekend. So lots of details for anybody who's considering coming on that weekend. And I thought after we talk about the weekend and what's on offer there, we can go into more before all the topics which I've chosen in combination with some friends of mine. So that's the general gist. So let's just go into the weekend first. There's a number of questions that I'll just go through with you. Who's it for? Who do you want? Beginners or more experienced folk? Any background reading needed? Any specific experiences needed? Will there be much meditation on the weekend? How would you describe your teaching style? And what attitudes are best to bring for anybody who's coming on the weekend? And what can people expect to walk away with? That's quite a lot of questions. So we'll just start somewhere. You get the gist.
Yeah, the answer is yes
To all of those
to all
questions.
those questions.
All right, so who's it for? Who do you
Well,
tend to have on your weekends? Beginners or more experienced folk?
in some ways, I'm just so happy to come to Ireland. As you may know, I'm all four of my grandparents were born in Ireland.
I didn't know that. John Brady told me a little bit. Can you say a
Yeah.
little bit about where they're born?
Yeah, Sligo, Mayo, Cork, and Donegal.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing. So that's beautiful parts of Ireland. I'm from Northern Ireland myself. I've got big Donegal connections. So
So I'm
you're
coming
looking,
home is
yeah, you're
basically
coming
it.
home. Oh,
And
great.
I'm coming home, having traveled both, growing up Roman Catholic in kind of the era of the kumbaya when we had the masses with
Yeah.
the guitars and priests in hippie clothes and
Yeah,
things
I've been
in
there
South
myself.
America. So starting out feeling like, hey, Jesus is pretty cool, but then getting a sense of looking for having early on in life some kind of spontaneous shifts of awareness and some longing and curiosity, and following those impulses. When I answer a question like, who is this for? It's really for everyone, and some people who think they're beginners are actually the more advanced people. It's really not about like formal meditation, step-by-step mindfulness, although
Okay.
sometimes I use the word effortless mindfulness.
Yeah, I'd like to go into that at some stage. Okay.
Yeah. So it's really a series of shifts or glimpses or invitations or pointers, primarily because the assumption is that whatever you want to call our true nature, our spiritual dimension, our divine and immanent sense of who we are, equally already available as who we are, isn't something that needs to be developed or created, almost like a that we're, not human beings trying to be spiritual as, but we're spiritual beings learning how to be human. So how to make that shift from very mental, very body-mind oriented to this nature that is more spacious and open and free and loving, unconditionally loving, and then importantly, in my teaching in this tradition, is to then include your body so that you're both transcendent and immanent. So there's a both a recognition of the sense of your spiritual being, or and that it's not an intellectual process. It's very much of a experiential, energetic, direct knowing
Yeah.
from the new knowing. Not you can't even go back to your mind for a second opinion to
Yeah.
see whether you're there. Yeah,
Yeah.
does that make sense?
That makes sense. Absolutely. Okay. I'm getting a sense of what the weekend is covering. What would be the typical profile of someone who comes on a weekend, one of your weekends? Like, would they be Buddhist? Would they be Christian?
Yeah, pretty much anyone and everyone. It's I call myself part of the human being lineage. So I, you know, my background is that I kind of had some of these little spontaneous awakenings, you know, especially as I look back. And I'm sure that if many people listening now really look back at their history and with this kind of view, that you could really find times that you were truly connected, free, open, embodied, interconnected, feeling of loving presence. And the assumption is that is who we truly are. And that's not an altered state, that the altered state is what we're walking around in. So we can find our true nature. And having followed that calling, I went to explore graduate school in both an eclectic master in divinity and in psychology and spirituality at Union Theological in New York, and did a joint degree with Columbia University's social work, clinical social work program. And during that time, I went on a fellowship to Sri Lanka, India, and Nepal, and studied cross-cultural perspectives on healing, which involved meeting a lot of the Eastern mystics, including Bede Griffiths and Anthony DeMello, who are both kind of Christian mystics who were living in India, and spent time with both of them, as well as Buddhism, Hinduism in different capacities, and was really looking for what is the essential sameness and what are the modes and the means of recognizing and realizing this which everyone is talking about. And that's, you know, I approached it both spiritually, but also scientifically, and, you know, kind of in a practical way of like, what really works? How do you do it? What does it? Who does it? And what are the traps and the impediments? And what stabilizes that makes it more primary, and what pops you back out into the more mental, egoic view?
Wow, that's incredibly rich, Log, as a background coming to all of this. Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
And so many topics in there. Yeah. Still kind of focus on the person turning up at your weekend.
Yeah.
So I get a sense this is for someone who really wants to make a shift into those qualities that you mentioned, freedom, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So how does your approach or what you teach differ from any other teacher who's, you know, the generality is freedom, it's compassion, it's love, et cetera. How would you say you're different? Not that I want to emphasize you've been different, but what unique, say, offering do you have in this arena?
Yeah. Following on, that's a wonderful question and really helpful, in that it's not a progressive kind of meditational path. It's actually what's called a direct path with gradual unfolding. So there's a sense that myself and some colleagues who are similar have this kind of feeling that the higher teachings and many of the people we met could point out or show us how to shift into that which is already here and awake, embodied, and open-hearted. So in some ways, it's these small moments or shifts or kind of background, foreground transitions that familiarize ourselves with ourselves, with our true nature, with our spiritual heart, and that sacred heart, or that dropping from head to heart, allows us to feel fully human and have this freedom of feeling interconnected and dynamically present in the now. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I read your book, Shift into Freedom, probably about 2 years ago when it was published, and I found it extremely useful. Is the weekend pulling from that book, saying that their techniques is a bit too reductionist, but there are certainly instructions, pointers.
Yeah.
There may be people who are who may not have heard about pointers before. Yeah. Could you just talk about what you will be offering in terms of concrete? You do this in order to experience this.
Sure. Yes. The book, my book, Shift into Freedom, is a kind of an overview and kind of a comprehensive attempt at a map or
a very good map.
Bringing together wisdom traditions from around the world, which I honor all of them, and then bringing them into contemporary, simple, elegant as possible language, which includes neuroscience, which I've been involved with, and psychology from a more Western perspective. Bringing that kind of marriage together brings kind of wisdom and love and personal and communal perspective. So direct or glimpse practices is literally the sense that our current condition is obscured, or that we're focused through just a simple habit of orienting to thought and creating a thinker. Mm. And then we start to feel like I think, therefore I am.
Yeah.
And then the thinking creates a manager that's trying to control emotions and repressing. And it's a whole kind of round and round looping pattern, trying to become smarter and faster and cleaning up this container of a body mind. Through effort and gradual techniques like meditation and psychology and positive thinking and attitude adjustment and good behavior.
Okay,
and those are all wonderful. Yeah, they're all wonderful things that we continue to do. However, there's some sense that literally your awareness is identified or attached, let's say, almost like feeling there's a little point of view behind in the middle of your head, looking out of your eyes, like a feeling of a contracted little mini me. And that if your awareness simply could know and feel that it could step back and drop and literally feel your jaw from within, your throat from within, and then drop below your neck into your heart space.
Yeah.
That if you just allow that to happen, it can take a few seconds or a minute. And then when you feel like your awareness or you've decentered.
Yeah.
And found this boundless heart that's also embodied, and you're almost looking out of the eyes of the heart, and your view is completely different. It's not that you're just living at home in the heart mind and using Wi-Fi to the files in the office of your head.
Mm-hmm.
And that little shift from head to heart, can change your perception, the way of knowing, and your identity and your relationships to others.
Okay. Well, and so that's the promise of the weekend, is it? All of that. And you think that's possible in the weekend?
It's possible. It's amazing. I pretty much within an hour, if I do a short meeting, I mean, literally my scientific studies have told me that 8 out of 10 people in an hour and a half will get a glimpse of something that they thought they needed to go on a 5-day retreat. To find.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So like we're talking about saving time and effort here.
Yeah.
Would that be correct? Through what you're sharing?
That's right.
Okay. Well, time and effort are something that I think people really want to, they don't want to waste time these days. There is a sort of urgency around at the moment. And nobody wants to make too much effort to get to where they want to go to. Okay, so let's move. Hopefully you've got a good sense if you're listening about what Locke is offering on the weekend. My friend John Brady, who is a mutual friend of me and Locke, he was at one of your weekends, Locke, and he said that, and like he's a very, very experienced weekend workshop retreat person, and he said that your ability to be with people and to sort of shape the, well, to lead basically, was just completely excellent. I mean, he thought you were the best leader of the weekend that he'd come across, which is quite something to say. Okay, so let's go on to some more specific questions. I put it out to some interested friends, and basically there's about four or five sort of key questions that I'd like us to cover. So this relates to your own teachings, Locke. You make this distinction between effortless mindfulness compared to deliberate mindfulness. So, you know, you are connecting with the mindfulness sort of idea, inspirational idea that's out there, the idea of mindfulness. At the same time, though, you're making a distinction, effortless versus deliberate. Could you go into that, please, the difference?
Sure, yes. I mean, I really come from wisdom traditions, and in some ways, I enjoy using many different languages. I could probably teach my whole workshop using Christian language. I could use Buddhist language, Hindu language, Taoist language, science language, psychology language, and say the same thing.
Okay, brilliant.
So, I'm kind of looking for what the highest wisdom traditions have said, and then bringing it into some language to meet people where they're starting. So that's why I kind of linked one of the language systems to mindfulness, just because it seems like people are starting from a kind of human being spiritual language that doesn't rely on a religious theology to own it. You know, one of my good friends is Father Thomas Keating, and he and I talk about this a lot. But the mindfulness language just seems like starting with being alert and being attentive, being focused, and being connected to whatever you are doing or whoever you're with, rather than being distracted, unconscious, projecting, being caught in a mood or a attitude or a worldview that's treating someone like an object. So there's something in common in just the word mindfulness is just being aware, present, and interconnected. So the difference in some ways is what level of mind are you mindfulness from? So If you're mindful from a very mental place or even a kind of meditative witness that's watching thoughts come and go, you get certain benefits, but these are traditionally the preliminary practices.
Okay, interesting.
And in most traditions, particularly Tibetan Buddhism, you start with shamatha or one-pointed mindfulness, and then you go to vipassana or insight meditation, which is recognizing that your thoughts, feelings, and sensations are coming and going, and there's kind of a mindful witness set up to realize that if you're thinking, oh, I can't believe this is happening, this is really terrible, this is means that nothing will ever work out in my life, that's not you, but that is a part of you or a thought that's appearing to a witnessing, non-judgmental witnessing awareness, and then you have the ability to respond and not get identified or caught in that. And then the next move is really actually to either go so far within to the stream of awareness that's like a microcosm of the universe or the kingdom of heaven is within, or to open up, to turn around and almost look through the meditator or open to that resource of vast, infinite sense of connection, and then feel as if you've accessed another non-conceptual mind that's aware and interconnected. And people, at first, it could sound abstract, but as I get people to kind of talk about It's often like in what's called in psychology a flow state or being in the zone.
Yeah.
So people who have done music or art, sports, even driving a car, you go into this peripheral, panoramic, embodied awareness where there's a feeling of actual optimal functioning in whatever you're doing, and yet you're not referencing thought and you're not consciously mindful in an like one-pointed way of what you're doing. You're actually feeling interconnected and flowing and aware from this in the now. Time is slows down. There's not an egoic doer of what's happening, but it's a functional level of mind. It's not a absorbed or reclusive mindfulness. It's effortlessly mindful. You're effortlessly focused and related and connected. And so it's recognizing and realizing and accessing this dimension without having to necessarily do those activities or only those activities in order to feel connected and flowing and loving and able to live from an awake heart.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you will be talking to the mindfulness idea that people have and maybe giving them some distinctions that will be useful for their practice.
Yeah.
Certainly sounds effortless, sounds great.
Yeah, so another way to say it would be from the Christian tradition would be contemplation in action.
Yes, okay, yeah, brilliant. And you'd bring people step by step through how to do that, yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so here's another question. It's really just about your own process.
Yeah.
Locke, I'm just going to make a couple of assumptions here in this question. Like broadly, I think doing spiritual practice changes oneself.
Yeah.
Like one changes, one notices something is different.
Yeah.
So it's great trying to find something that people actually agree with. Can we agree on that, please? Things seem different now. Okay. What I would like to know is, what about the basic human emotions, like you mentioned, you're in the lineage of human.
Yeah.
What about, say, well, first of all, where would you position yourself, or do you think it's virtually bad manners to do that? Would you position yourself as an awake being or in the post-awakened state? Where is Locke Kelly? Do you even calibrate yourself like this at all?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm co-teaching with somebody now who's a very amazing energy healer. And we were just sitting at breakfast literally this morning going through, and she teaches 100 students in her school. And she's saying, well, can you give me some markers? Let's talk about the markers. What are the shifts? Is there stable awakening? Is there, how do you know when you're here and what's happening and what's true and what's real? Mm-hmm. So I think there are, it's in some ways, there's many variety of doorways into awakening and initial awakening. And then there is a process of unfolding that people go through at different timings, and some have different obstacles to deal with. And there's also different learning styles. So people are more kinesthetic, tend toward yoga and Tai Chi, or people who are more mental, start with an intellectual or visual or auditory. But those strengths can also become hooking points that keep you only so far. So the feeling is there's almost kind of an initial many doors, but then there are common principles of awakening that seem to generally be able to be described, and you can fine tune and kind of see where your growing edge is. And then there's many varieties of expressions from when people do wake up from this kind of ego center to this spiritual mind, this awake, aware mind, and then embody energetically and emotionally into this kind of greater sense of self that's both bigger than you and who you really are. then your relationship to different parts of you and emotions is very different, because there's a loving you that's with these parts. And that's one of the important markers. So it's not that they stop emotions. There's schools, as you say, there's schools that have a model that says you transcend emotions. There's schools that, you know, in the kind of non-dual world, that say there's nobody here named Locke. There's just awareness. And there's kind of very transcendent, pure spirit or pure consciousness. There's others that say, well, you have to stop your thoughts, or, you know, have no emotions.
Yeah.
And those, you know, those schools are those schools. That's not my experience, and that's not my interest.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like being very joyous. There's a joyous, embracing, integrated, larger, more resourceful dimension of no self-self, or self greater than the ego, that is, that feels interconnected with everyone. So it's not just a local view. There's a feeling of more richness and juiciness to life, not just stopping at often what is an initial stage, which is kind of detaching or stepping out or separating or waking up from that small center of self that is very hyper personality based.
Yeah.
To this more pure awareness that at that stage is kind of free. And then that freedom feels energetic and embodied. So that kind of process can happen in a weekend with glimpsing each of these stages.
Yeah.
Then that microcosm of glimpsing it unfolds over time with people at their own pace. So that's, you know, that's what I've observed, and I'm very interested in those questions and being open to new learnings and what new obstacles and new kind of avenues that people bring.
Okay.
I don't think there's one way.
Okay. There's a couple of things in there. One is like, for you, Locke, yourself, I mean, you may not want to go into this, and I know, respect this. What about the so-called inverted commas, negative emotions, frustration, anger, impatience, even what might be considered positive emotions like a longing, etc.? Do they still happen to you? Like, did you still get impatient? Do you still get angry?
Yes. So this is the thing, is that it's, you know, it's a process and unfolding, and I definitely have gone through almost like different stages, and even they were influenced by what I initially believed was more the sense of trying to transcend emotions and having that initial waking up from the personality kind of ego center to a more spacious spiritual dimension that I kind of tried to stay there.
Yeah.
And the great gift was that I was married, and that my wife Paige said, "Hey, where'd you go?"
Okay.
And I said, "What do you mean? I'm fine. I feel very happy and connected." And she said, "No, you're not here." And so I had to realize, oh, I see. That's only the first step.
Okay.
And then as that spacious spiritual dimension embodies, then there's the capacity to deal with and to relate to and love what was called negative emotions
or
parts. They're actually realized, now I realize and I experience, when they arise almost as either kind of protective parts of me that are trying to help me through their fear or anger or worry. And that if I can be that awake, connected, loving presence to them, and literally connect to them and listen to them rather than spiritually zap them away or meditate them away or call them negative. If I say to a part that's like, you know, I don't understand what's going on with, you know, with that person.
Yeah.
And then I can feel like, oh, well, what is it you're so afraid of? I'm not afraid. I'm angry. Oh, okay. Well, what are you angry about? Oh, well, it feels like they're trying to put me down. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me more. Where does that come from? Well, I just feel like I need to protect this little part of me, this other part that feels shame and feels like it's been hurt in my life. And I said, oh, thank you so much for helping us with that. But I'm here with you. And I'm here with that part now. How does that feel?
Okay.
And then there's kind of a relationship to what was called negative that becomes like a family of, you know, that you start to realize, or I started to realize, there's no parts that are bad. That even the angry, rageful, fearful, selfish parts are trying to get love. Mm. And that when there's this waking up to this awake heart, then from there, all parts are welcome. And there's a relationship that doesn't mean that things don't arise and that they don't need to be healed and cleared out. And if I do get caught by some, which happens less.
Okay, that does happen less. Okay.
It happens much less. And the basic ground of daily life is, you know, like the peace that passes understanding.
Okay.
Like if I just stop talking, that's what's here. Mm. And then when I talk, it's still here. Mm. And I'm talking from here. So, you know, the me that was here 20 years ago is, you know, it's been a tremendous transformation. It's just not the same identity or way of knowing. And yet it's, you know, I'm not flatlined either. You know, I feel like sometimes I say, like, you know, what does it feel like? I feel like a kid on the first day of summer vacation.
Okay.
Like waking up and going like, wow, what are we going to do today? Oh my God, this is going to be great. I don't know. Okay, well, let's see what happens.
All right. That's every day, is it, Locke?
It's kind of the norm, you know, and then, you know, there's different, you know, moods and situations and body states and things that come in. But it becomes more abiding, more the norm, and then there's different energies and emotions, and there's also kind of a detox process that starts happening.
Okay.
So rather than, this isn't kind of important for the Christian tradition, is once you have an awakening, it doesn't feel like you have any more dark nights of the soul, but instead you have detox and thawing out.
Okay, could you just talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, so in dark night of the soul or dark night of the spirit, it's almost like because you haven't woken up yet, the tremendous repressed content of consciousness is wanting to be liberated, and there's a hope and intention to let it come to the divine presence and to integration, but there's still a kind of primary ego that's in the dark night, because there hasn't been an upgrading of the awareness, the capacity, and literally the spatial dimension of vast loving presence, which so it's like the small you is being overwhelmed and taken through this dark night journey, which, because the emotions and the contents are so much stronger than you. But as soon as you feel awakened, then the same content can be there. The early childhood hurt and trauma, the states of fear and worry. But the you is now has so much more capacity and volume and presence and loving space. That it feels like a detox or a shake and bake, I call it sometimes, or a kind of a thawing out from being in the cold, in front of a fire.
Okay. That's really interesting, Locke. What was coming to my mind was when you mentioned detox and dark nights and all of that, is the importance of support or community or relationship with people. So when someone comes along to your weekend, what further support for their own fullness, especially the detoxes, the thawing out, etc. Yeah. They sound like, you know, some company might be nice. Who knows what's happening? Where does that fit in with, say, you jetting into Dublin for the weekend? And, and maybe not. Maybe you will stay. You'll fall in love. But somehow I feel you've got all the commitments. So what about that? So someone comes along for the weekend, suddenly this, on Monday morning, this strange sensation happens at the base of their spine. And, and they come out in pimples and they're having a detox. Like, what is support for someone like that?
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. I do have my Irish citizenship that I got through my grandparents. So you never know. Maybe I won't leave.
Okay. Great. In County Mayo, there's a wise person living. Okay.
So, the first thing is that to recognize that any community or support or loving group that they have now is very important to make as one of the whatever they're going through.
Yeah.
That those people can give them the love and support, those true community that they have. And then hopefully meeting some others in whatever meditation or spiritual groups that they're in currently that may be able to understand some of this and get some support through that.
Okay.
And, you know, ultimately I'm going to create a year-long training program that will have teach some teachers and that kind of thing.
Okay.
But ultimately, I guess the two main resource is that what my hope is and what I'm glimpsing and pointing to is the self that has the capacity to be with the parts of yourself. So really, that the first, that you, the true you is who you've been looking for all along. That's, you know, the first level, and then getting community of others who kind of have that same experience or have been through that to help help support. And there's different, you know, different languages, and people go to different places to find that support. But in some ways, the awareness starts showing itself to itself, and the self starts loving the parts, and you can get some support if you go a little bit off, like you said, if you have something in your spine. But often if you find the trust and the love, and the other resource would be that there are people who do one-on-one sessions, either Skype sessions, or I have some resources for that, or even a community called Internal Family Systems, which is a psychological method, which has people in Europe, which works with particularly from self to parts. So those kind of resources are available.
Okay, great. And anyone coming along on the weekend who's interested in that, you'll have things to point into. Great. All right, so we'll just do one more question, and then I'll ask you just maybe if you have anything you'd like to add, and then I'll summarize when the weekend is in Dublin, etc. So this is a very specific question. It's almost like a specialized question, Locke. So it's basically, again, asking you about your experience. I quoted, does it seem like space and time are valid or true to you?
Yeah. So, so one of the changes, and this is kind of, you go from this current orientation to a kind of a new orientation. In some ways, that's a great question, because like one of the chapters in my book, Shift into Freedom, I call it location, location, location.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than asking the traditional question of who am I as an inquiry, I tend to ask, where am I?
Okay, so it's a temporal, that's a spatial.
And maybe even when am I?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's where am I? It literally feels like one of the most important things is shifting from this kind of mental manager that literally feels for most people like you are centered behind your eyes, looking out in the middle of your head, or perhaps in this kind of cloud of emotion that's in your kind of emotional heart and your head, and you're trying to figure everything out. One of the first things, rather than cleaning up the cloud, which is what we've been doing, or, you know, replacing the manager or having a debate in your head with different parts of yourself to try to, well, why don't you do this? What do you mean do that? I'll do that. You're like, instead of doing that, you literally shift out of the cloud into the sky.
Okay.
And that spatial dimension, or you drop deeper within you, within the core, within your heart space, so deeply the kingdom with heaven within that it opens up.
Okay.
And so that shift into timeless, boundless, contentless awareness or spirit as your support then feels like it is spacious, and then it feels energetic and interconnected. And the feeling is that you're aware from within, you're aware from all around, and you're aware from being interconnected with everyone. And it feels like you've kind of dropped from head to heart.
I get that even as you describe it.
Yeah.
Okay. Righty-ho. And then, so what does that leave you, like you lock with your time and space? I mean, what experientially?
Yes. So the space, literally the space is one of the keys, is that I feel literally connected to everything through kind of an awareness energy field. My perception that my eyes aren't dominant and my thoughts thinker isn't dominant.
Okay.
That I've kind of dropped, and that Augustine used the word oculus cordis, which means eyes of the heart. So it feels literally like I'm looking out of the eyes of my heart and connected, both protected and connected to everyone. And there's a feeling of a lot of space for any emotion that comes up. And the time feels like there's both, that I'm in the now, that there's no rush. There's no compulsion to need to do anything or go anywhere to get anything, to be okay. There's a sense of well-being or okayness in the now. And there's a kind of infinity and timeless presence.
Okay.
And but then there's also a functional ability to look at our clock and realize, okay, the next thing to do is this thing, and then I'll meet this person at this time. And so there's a relationship to relative time. It's not being spaced out, and it's not being, you know, kind of not related to other people. There's more relationship and a feeling of flow.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I got that. Thank you. Brilliant. All right. I think we're going to come to the end of our scheduled time together, Locke. Okay. It seems to have flown past.
Yeah.
Have you anything to add to what we've been talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I would certainly invite anyone who's listening to come check it out. That, you know, you never know. That what I've been finding over the last 15 years is, and what I feel is important, is that what's called awakening is a natural capacity of human beings, that it hasn't been clearly offered in a way that is available. And I'm hoping, and that's my loving interest in life, is to make this more available to people, because it's natural, because it's already who you are. And I feel that you can access this immediately, because it's already here in a glimpse, and then you'll have a process of living from more loving support that you may have been cut off from. And so that's the intention, is really, you know, that I'm not, you know, not a guru. I'm actually a peer that's really saying, hey, the water's great. Come on in, check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I get that. Absolutely. Okay, and your website, what's the name of your website, Locke?
So it's lockkelly.org, L-O-C-H, like the Scottish spelling.
Yeah.
L-O-C-H-K-E-L-L-Y, like the Irish spelling of Kelly, or Southern okay. Irish? Or,
That's all Irish.
That's all Irish, yeah. All Irish spelling.
We're all Irish. Yeah, all Irish, even Northern Ireland is called Ireland.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and the dates for Dublin again, that's the 14th, 15th of September. That's Saturday and a Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday. It's in a beautiful place.
It's called the Chapel of Ease, which is a new venue in Dublin. It's a converted church in a place called Irish Town, which is very centrally located, plenty of parking. The main arteries going into Dublin's north, east, south, and west all converge on that one place. So it's very, very easy to get to from anywhere in Ireland. Okay. So
it'll be 2 days. It'll be Saturday and Sunday, but you can come both days, which is recommended, but we're going to make it, if we have enough space available, to come one day also.
Okay. I think there's 120 seats in the place. Okay. So that's like pretty flexible. But that's what Noel, the guy who owns it, said. Okay. So, look, I really thank you from my heart for your sharing. Thank you so much. And I look forward to meeting you in person in September. I plan to be there.
Thank you so much, Anthony. I really, really look forward to that too, and meeting everyone there and returning home to my home country.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, how exciting for you, for all of us. Yeah. Okay, so big love, and we will speak at some stage, Locke.
Okay, lots of love, Anthony. Take care, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.